You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Postmodern, a reaction against the ideas and values of modernism. Avant-garde, new, unusual, and experimental ideas. KBOO, a community radio station that supports both. Join us in our mission to push the status quo by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give between now and May 25th to donate and help us reach our $60,000 spring membership drive goal.
KBOO's board is recruiting directors. In preparation for our annual board election in September, KBOO's nominating committee will be holding virtual information sessions from now through June. KBOO's board of directors guides the station's strategic plan and represents the interests and visions of all of our members. BIPOC persons are especially encouraged to apply. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/boardrecruiting. Thank you for considering board work at KBOO.
Hi, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. On That Vegan Show, you will hear in-depth guest interviews on vegan-related topics, such as companion animals, environmentalism, social issues, and food and nutrition. We also learn about specific animals, such as possums and rabbits, including their needs and ways to help them. Be sure to tune in to That Vegan Show on the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Dwight Yoakam, and you're listening to KBOO.
Hola. Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unions segment of Labor Radio, celebrated here on KBOO 90.7 FM, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I am the current president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists and the vice president of the Oregon AFSCME Retirees Chapter. I am a retired public employee after working 38 years for the Department of Corrections. My union representation was through Oregon AFSCME.
Hello, this is Dr. Audrey Terrell. I'm retired from the International UAW Women's Department in Detroit, Michigan, and I'm also the vice president of the Oregon CBTU and president and CEO of the Dr. Audrey Terrell Institute.
Hello, listeners. This is Deborah Hall, and I'm the current secretary treasurer of the Oregon Coalition of the Black Trade Unionists. I'm also a retired member of the American Federation of Teachers in Oregon and past president of the Classified Union at Portland Community College, and currently serving in the city of Vancouver, Washington as a commissioner on the Civil Service Commission. Welcome to the show. All right. The outcome of the 2020 United States Census report reflects that Oregon's population is growing. This growth reflects a pattern highlighting an expansion of non-white residents. Tonight, considering the current election process we are involved in, the Oregon CBTU chapter would like to emphasize the need for eligible voters of color to participate. Our show is not an endorsement to any specific candidate, but should be considered as a guideline on how to address your specific needs with local, state, and congressional candidates here in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Across the nation every day, we bear witness the undoing of inherent rights. We witness an increasing desire to turn back the clock. We experience a subtle stream of disengagement. We are subjected to the expanding belief that the election is reduced to a process of voting for the lesser evil.
Tonight, our goal is to spread the belief that all politics are local. Insists that addressing the nationwide malicious required individuals' engagement, every eligible voter not only needs to register, but also needs to cast a vote in the upcoming primary and general elections. So to encourage every voter to share their needs and to highlight their value with candidates of their choice. To remind every voter to not only research the candidate of their choice, but to also hold them accountable.
Tonight, our guest is a CBTU hometown favorite, Vinnie Blanco Jr., a labor relations specialist. We've invited Brother Blanco to help us sort through some of our opening statements.
Hey, Brother Blanco, this is Deborah Hall. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. Good to see you.
All right. So, Brother Blanco, can you please share with us some of the receipts that qualify you as not only a labor relations specialist, but also as an effective political consultant?
Definitely. First off, thank you for having me here, and I'm looking forward to our conversation tonight. I went to San Diego State University for undergrad and received a bachelor's degree in both political science to gain a better understanding of politics and governments. And also I received a bachelor's degree in sociology to comprehend the development, structure, and functioning of human social relationships and industries. After graduating from SDSU, I attended Loyola University of Chicago School of Law, where I successfully earned my Juris Doctor degree. I have been representing labor unions for over a decade as the capacity of a labor relations specialist. Throughout this time, I acquired experience in private and public sector representation, leading contract bargaining, arbitrations, grievances, and investigatory meetings. But in addition, I conduct currently now bargaining, grievance, and labor relations training with a racial justice focus. Along my journey of labor representation, I noticed that the makeup of our workforce is changing. Our workforce is becoming more diverse than ever. Many of our workers are not only hoping, they are demanding that there is better legislation that benefits working families from marginalized communities and Black and Brown people. I noticed that there is a gap when it comes to funding, to teaching, and supporting our political candidates that are Black and Brown. Well, I believe that inaction is action. I could not just sit around silent while watching thousands of the workers I represent not have their voices heard through the legislature. Therefore, I began lending my expertise to support political candidates that are Black and Brown. As I helped lobby for the universal health care for all and other bills such as the creation of health care for part-time instructors, these bills would not have made it across the finish line without our Black legislatures stepping up here in Oregon.
Awesome. And so also during Oregon CBTU's recent celebration of Black History Month, you hosted two of our panels. The theme of our program was Healthcare and Politics, Ride or Die Duo. What was your takeaway from this involvement?
Oh, this was beautiful. I mean, it was truly a celebration that we put on with CBTU and a few other organizations, right? In the celebration, I was thankful that I had the chance to interact with guests such as Lamar Wise, Legislative Director for Oregon ASME, April Sims, President of the Washington AFL-CIO. President Sims is also the first Black woman to be voted in as the President of Washington AFL-CIO. Oregon State Representative Travis Nelson would join us, as well as Oregon State Representative Janelle Bynum, who is running for Congress. And also, to top it off, Senator James Manning, who is now running for Oregon Secretary of State.
All right. The focus of the panels was to outline the value and relevance of communities of color. Participants were lobbyists and current political office holders. How would you rate their overall reception to addressing the needs of communities of color?
Well, I would say that the overall grade I would get is an A+ for them. I mean, all of the folks that participated were stepping up. In particular, if you look at Senator Manning, he just passed the interpreter's bill through ASME Oregon, which is helping out workers get a living wage. He also helped out with the bill that funds prepaid return ballot, ensuring equitable voting access to all. He's also the chief of SB 1089, which is for the universal health care for Oregon. This rings especially loud for our Black and Brown communities.
Brother Blanco, Oregon with its growth is transitioning into a more diverse living experience. So how do this transition of Oregon politics is to be more reflective of this?
This is a great question, Dr. Terrell. To be just straightforward with you, the best way is back Brown and Black candidates with your money, with your time. The community needs Black and Brown candidates to be better supported. We all know that our union members come from the community, and therefore it is imperative for our unions also to support Black and Brown candidates.
So, Brother Blanco, in our opening statement, we acknowledge that voters must become more educated on political candidates. How do you go about doing this?
I would say, from my expertise and from my experiences, that you go about this by giving Black and Brown candidates money, funding them at the same capacity that their white counterparts are funded. Black and Brown candidates have experienced that they have to work twice as good or be twice as good to have half as much. We need our Black and Brown candidates and need to back them so they have the same opportunities to run numerous commercials, to run printed materials, and have massive door knocking and get out the vote days. Historically, many political candidates that have won don't necessarily win because of the most qualified, but they win on who fundraises the best. Then the public wonders why at the end they have candidates that don't truly advocate for the issues that pertain to Black and Brown and LGBTQI plus members.
So how, Brother Blanco, do you prepare the candidates to listen to learn rather than listening to respond?
You know what, Dr. Terrell, my best advice that I give our candidates is I remind our candidates that they're public servants, not politicians.
Wonderful.
So I'd like to remind our listeners that they are listening to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, highlighting the works of the working class, by the working class, for the working class, here on KBOO 90.7 FM, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. Hey, Brother Blanco, how do you awaken the sleeping giants in the communities of color to increase their knowledge of the working dynamics of the political process?
You know, I would say radio shows like this, coverage like this, the Coalition of Black Trade Unions, the CBTU community events, having the series we had during Black History Month and featuring some of our other champions in politics that are Black and Brown, opening up our communication to all community groups and combining our efforts to encourage and support folks to be more involved in the political process.
Okay. So there's a general belief that Black votes can only matter if Black lives matter. How can that be infused within the campaign?
Well, this is a really heavy question, right? And a serious question. And I believe that in 2020, we saw a nation stand up, didn't we? A state stood up together behind Black Lives Matter. We saw a surge in unionism across the country. During this Black Lives Matter in the last few years, we saw a membership went up. Racial justice policies were being touted left and right. Treatment of employees were being focused on more than ever. We started to educate the community and educate our members more about discrimination and sexual harassment, ageism, protecting people with disabilities. Our DEI work increased over the last years. But what do we see now? We see that these areas that we increased upon, our racial justice and DEI work, is now being under attack. I would say during this time, we must champion and continue to champion Black Lives Matter daily so that we do not lose the momentum of what caused everyone to benefit from in the last years.
Okay. So given the challenging numbers of Black union activists, what role does organized labor play in this fight?
Organized labor plays a huge role. Considering the most organized labor is formed from our hardworking members in the community. Our members in the community are diverse, rich with culture. The workforce is more diverse than ever and will continue to increase in this direction. It is tantamount that our organized labor not only educate, but support candidates that are Black and Brown and represent the communities that our workforce actually comes from.
So, would you suggest that members of color participate in the candidate endorsement process that happens in these union organizations?
I would say 100% yes. In addition, there needs to be more equitable representation of BIPOC members on these PACs.
All right. Would you educate the endorsed candidates on matters that are important to them?
I definitely would. I would definitely educate the endorsed candidates on matters that are important to them. I mean, they have to have their finger on the pulse, and I think that is the best way. And it makes for a two-way conversation, not just listening one way.
Okay. And the last one, would you encourage them to invite these candidates into their social networks?
Well, here's where the rubber meets the road. The answer is yes. You cannot learn what a community needs, and you can't learn about a potential candidate at an arm's length distance. I would say yes. You cannot learn what the community needs or also what the candidate is even running for if you keep each other at an arm's length distance. It's important to embrace each other, to learn what the values are, learn what the person's running on as well. And then also, it's good to teach some of these candidates to have active listening, right?
That's right.
So definitely being in the social networks and getting to know what the community's needs are and what that candidate actually runs for and stands for is very important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the theme of our 2024 Coalition of Black Trade Unionists International Convention is Hate Cannot Erase Us. This theme addresses a national trend of shrinking inherent rights of women and communities of color. Here in Oregon, while we have smaller pockets, the threat is very real. How can candidates, organized labor, and community of color collaborate to keep these pockets small?
Definitely the threat is real right now. And I would say, once again, coming through the pandemic, we saw some of the best of people and we saw some of the worst of people. I saw some of the best of our unions and our labor unions and also our members coming together for racial justice, to protect racial justice, coming together to spread and talk about diversity and embrace diversity, equity, and inclusion. On this, I would say on the back of this, a lot of other things were won. Whether it was essential workers, right? Essential workers' rights, essential pay, several other contracts that we won during this time. Membership has raised up. So now that we are seeing some of the worst coming out of the pandemic as employers want to go back to business as normal, mm-hmm. as some of our hate groups want to come back to business as usual, we must not go back to business as usual. Our community groups must not go back to business as usual. Our unions cannot go back to business as usual, meaning we must embrace each other and talk about it and embrace racial justice. I think that's how we combat some of these other right-wing groups that are coming up again and let them know that we are not blind, our eyes are open, and we are in solidarity.
There you go. You know, what that reminds me of is, I can't remember if this commercial was on TV in the 60s or 70s. There's safety in numbers and more fun, too.
That's right.
All right. Brother Blanco, can you remind our listeners of the dates for the Oregon primary election and the general election?
Yes, I can. Our primary election is going to be on May 21st, and then general election is going to be November 5th. Really looking forward to everybody getting out there and getting out the vote, and just everybody putting in that effort so we can have a good turnout.
All right. Thank you.
So, Brother Blanco, you've been a union and community activist for years, but recently you have stepped up, and that you are actually helping candidates run for office. When did you know that this was a good time to do this?
That's a great question. As I've been going through my labor representation, and I'm, you know, having my finger on the pulse with a lot of our workers and a lot of our employees, I noticed that a lot of our employees that are, you know, Black and brown, people of color, wanted to run. And some of them may not be all the notable types, right? Uh-huh. But just some of those folks that are grassroots wanted to run. And some of them told me about just, Vince, I have to work. I'm working this 9 to 5. I don't have deep pockets to run. I don't know as many people. I haven't been promoting myself. I don't know that many people. And so when I found out that that was kind of a barrier for some of the people of color to run for a race, I decided that, you know, I can't just sit back and just give them armchair quarterback advice, mm-hmm. Or do this or call this person.
Sure.
I felt like I needed to use my expertise, some of my connections, and do the right thing. And just make sure I give them some support, you know, for their campaign, whether it's just going through and telling them some of the basics, making sure, you know, telling them about some of the hurdles or pitfalls not to watch out for. Uh-huh. But also, you know, if it had to be, you know, hey, how can we start promoting you so that you're in the same circles of other politicians that may already have some deeper pockets, and try to prove that, you know, no matter what. It's not the money, but it's the character of the person that's running, and the public needs to hear them.
Okay. Well, I hope after this session that you're not a one-hit wonder.
I hope so, too.
Because I think, of you know, your reasoning is extremely sound. I know that there are a lot of capable people of color who want to run, but they just don't know how to run. And so I'm just really excited the fact that you have, I don't want to say step from the frying pan into the fire, because typically it's not a positive connotation, but I'm just really happy to see that you stepped off the paper and onto the pavement with your beliefs. And so once again, thank you very much, Brother Blanco.
Thank you.
Keep that sizzle going.
Thank you once again, Brother Blanco, for all the work you do as a union activist. The political hailstorm is fast and furious. Safeguard your mental health and well-being, my brother. The Coalition of Black Trade Unions, we meet the second Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. We have suspended our face-to-face meetings and are utilizing Google Meet to conduct our monthly meetings. Our next meeting will be held May the 14th, 2024.
And our email address is orcbtu10, and that's the number 10, at gmail.com. And our Facebook page is at orcbtu. We would love to hear from you. Please join us in our evolving adventure of representing Black union workers. And with that, we'll say, holla!
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. I recently attended the Economist magazine World Ocean Summit in Lisbon, Portugal, one of many such international gatherings whereby ocean leaders, public and private, move from place to place, often to discuss the same issues with the same colleagues, with the same outcomes, albeit advanced incrementally by a collective will. The Economist conference is somewhat different, smaller, thus more accessible, and focused less on science and policy and more on finance and the emerging phenomena deemed the blue economy. Follow the money, they say, and it's an instructive path, particularly when aspirations meet the reality of economics and best intentions are stymied by vested interests, conventional investors, recalcitrant managers, and politicians lobbied this way and that according to who's got access to their vacillating attention. But in this instance, the encounters were personal and valuable, and the conversation was rich and provocative, and often points made in the presentation became big ideas in my mind. One such was a discussion of the role of regulation, systematic structures of rules developed over time in beginning to frame best practice and thereafter expanded to control abuse. Legislative initiatives, for example, are frequently delayed in implementation, awaiting the bureaucracy to draw up regulations to impose some sense of order on design, permits, inspections, in the execution from intent to outcome. Business complains about regulation impeding efficiency and profit. Environmentalists rely on regulation to control worst practice and complaint when even the rules in place are not enforced. Overall, regulation is a conflicted, contradictory word, attempting to describe the rationalization of social, political, and economic reaction to innovation and change. As a result, regulation slows things down, especially as these days almost every regulatory decision is followed by litigation that extends time, costs money, and often dilutes or defeats what began as an impetus for good. But what if regulation was redefined as a system of incentive, that is, initiative designed with intended outcomes foreseen and approvals based on acceptance of the rules in advance, incentivized by subsidy, advantageous financing, tax abatement or credit, or other means by which to motivate, even guarantee success in lieu of controversy, compromise, confrontation, and community disruption? What if regulation became a forward, motivating context in which to advance change rather than a backward, litigious impedance to progress? Government exerts all kinds of such incentives, development subsidy and tax advantage for agriculture and real estate, for example, and yet the recipients of such public funds often thereafter dispute and contest controls intended to make the project conform to the values and outcomes the funds were meant to catalyze. We see evidence of this all around us. Aquaculture projects and offshore wind farms are two examples close to home. There's a recognition of need. The technology responds, proposals are made, finances are secured, applications are prepared, and expectations are high. But then that recognition is confronted by a sudden opposition, often by those who have encouraged and supported the concept until it falls too close, too nearby, too locally disruptive, anywhere but in my backyard. And what happens then? Regulations are invoked, lawsuits, press releases, principal arguments combine to describe why change cannot, should not be allowed, regardless of recognized need. It happens again and again. We never seem to be able to anticipate or to compromise or to find a consensus before the fact. We always seem to find our objections and cleave to the regulations to deny the opportunity, indeed the actuality of change. In the meantime, every moment lost is withdrawn from our future. Every loss diminishes possibility and progress. Every diminishment increases the probability of failure. That is the antithesis of the true meaning of regulation: to control a process so that it works well, endures, increases, and builds, to enable, not to deny. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune into KBOO on Friday, May 10th from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. for the live broadcast of the Blues Carnival, Rhythm in Rio. Rhythm in Rio is a benefit show for healthcare for all Oregon, featuring Norman Sylvester and Blow.